You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
Satori botnet flashes into existence with 280,000 bots. Is there a router zero day out there? Insecure cryptocurrency apps aren't deterring speculators. How much energy does Bitcoin use? About as much as Denmark. Ethiopia's government is said to use spyware against journalists. Iran's Charming Kitty espionage group is looking at media, academics, activists, and political advisors. ISIS threatens cyber havoc this Friday, and the IOC takes a poke at Russia. Expect Fancy and Cozy Bear to poke right back. I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Wednesday, December 6, 2017. Security firm Kihoo 360 NetLab reports that a big Mirai-derived botnet, Satori, awoke yesterday, perhaps exploiting a Huawei Zero Day to herd 280,000 bots. Classic versions of Mirai, if we can call something a classic that's been around for less than a year and a half, use telnet scanners to find vulnerable devices. Satori does not. Kihoo 360 NetLabs says the botnet has two embedded exploits that seek to connect with devices on ports 37215 and 52869. As Bleeping Computer points out, quote, effectively, this makes Satori an IoT worm, being able to spread itself without the need for separate components, end quote. Kihoo 360 NetLabs thinks the exploit that connects to port 37215 is a zero day. They've been tracking it and have it under analysis, but they're unwilling to discuss it further for now. CenturyLink thinks the botnet may be abusing a zero day in Huawei Gateway home routers. There's less mystery surrounding the exploit that's hitting port 52869. That one is for a well-known and relatively old bug in some Realtek devices, CVE-2014-8361, if you're keeping score. A lot of Realtek devices have been patched for this one, which would suggest why this exploit has been the less successful of the two. There are some similarities between Satori and the Mirai variant that hit Argentina over the weekend, but researchers are tracking it as a distinct threat. And nothing yet, by the way, from Reaper, which has remained curiously quiet since its discovery. Do you overshare online? It's hard not to these days, thanks to social media, and there are specific risks to businesses that are easy to overlook. Kat Code is the founder of Binary Tattoo, a firm that helps companies and executives evaluate and protect their online profiles. and she offers advice on calibrating just how much you share.
It's a trade-off, right? So every time you're giving away your information, because of course, if you're not paying for the product, you are the product.
Right.
Every time you're giving away the information, you're getting something back for it. And the currency is your information. But I think what's happening is everyone is so used to now getting things done for them. Like if I'm going to download an app and it needs my contact book, well, why not? Because I want the app. And then they realize they don't want the app and delete it. And they've now given away all their contact information. Mm. People don't consider that before. Do I really need this service in exchange for my information or not? And they're just giving away the information all the time. So if you had to actually pay for something and you were being offered something and I came to your door and I said, would you like this? You would have to consider whether or not it was the right thing for you to purchase before you spent your money on it. Because you appreciate you can't get that money back again. But when it comes to online data as a currency, people don't consider that. They just keep giving it away and giving it away. And then if they don't like the product, they get rid of the product, but it's too late because they've already given the data to that company.
So when you're out and about and you're educating people on these sorts of things, are there things that come up that continue to surprise you?
The personal information always surprises me. The birthdays, the names of pets. Like when you think of the questions that you would get asked if you lost a password, like what is your mother's maiden name? That amount of information is so easily found. So one of the things I do, I joke I'm an online professional stalker. One of the things I do is I look for people online in order to tell them what their public identity looks like. So that they can go in and fix it and take away the stuff that they don't want shared. But I always find the answers to those questions. Again, pets' names, the street you grew up on. People will say, hey, look, the house is for sale that I grew up on. And I'm like, great, now I can answer that question. Or things about their grandparents is like, look, my maternal grandparents and there's their mother's maiden name. That information, you don't need to share that. You don't need to share your birthday or your children's birthdays. None of that information is required online. That is voluntarily shared information.
You know, a lot of businesses are finding themselves victims of spear phishing, and you make the point that a lot of social media accounts, even if you think it may be locked down, it might not be as secure as you think.
So if, for instance, if I were to go into a Facebook account and you've got everything locked down, a profile photo is always public, always. And there's no way to lock down the likes on it. So in 5 minutes, I can figure out who you're connected with, even if you've closed your friend list off based on that. So if your security settings are not set, I can get some personal information about you that way. And if not, I can go through your friends. So what often happens is people will call a second person in the company or they will email them and they will have enough personal information about another member of that company that gives that second person security that this person knows what they're talking about. So I could call, for instance, an executive assistant and say, hey, I know Bill's on a plane to Italy right now. I'm friends of his through his daughter's school and soccer club and, you know, his wife, Brenda. And I'm just calling because we're supposed to do this business transaction. I need it to go in by 4:00. And so I'm going to send you an email from my company. I just need you to press this button and then a bunch of extra information that makes it sound like I clearly know who this person is.
Right.
And lots of companies are losing money this way because they have this trust factor that there's no way you could possibly know that much about someone without having actually known them.
So in that kind of a case, what's to be done?
A lot of it is an awareness. Part of it is the fact that Bill has probably overshared his information online or is unaware of what he is sharing. He's put his own profile at risk by oversharing the information. And the second thing is to go into these companies. And as part of the cybersecurity training, we have a lot of amazing software products that come in and prevent regular phishing scams and all that stuff. But it is the human firewall is so key right now that companies need to make sure that their employees appreciate the element of human engineering that's happening. And just because someone says they know someone or seems to have a lot, that's not enough to verify who they are.
That's Kat Code. Her company is Binary Tattoo. Have you ever wondered how much energy the Bitcoin network consumes? Sure you have. We have. Especially since Bitcoin and other blockchain-based technologies are being invoked all over the place for everything from remittances to IoT security. DigEconomist has taken a look at the question, and they estimate that annually, Bitcoin uses about as much electrical power as Denmark, which suggests to some observers that maybe the cryptocurrency isn't, as they say, sustainable. It also suggests why criminals have been willing to take the time and effort to install miners in Android devices. Phishing emails are becoming more persuasive, using Mailsploit for greater plausibility, and incorporating the trappings of encryption to lure in marks who'd otherwise be wary. Citizen Lab reports finding evidence that the government of Ethiopia is using lawful intercept software developed by Cyberbit to spy on journalists. An ISIS video posted online promises to deliver a major cyber attack against the U.S. this Friday. The former caliphate, now clearly in its diaspora phase, has shown little ability to do more than low-grade website defacements of indifferently defended targets, and they're probably feeling some pressure to demonstrate serious cyber attack capabilities. It's a threat worth watching, but so far unsupported by much evidence. Iranian espionage group Charming Kitten is said by Israeli cyber firm Clear Sky Cybersecurity to have embarked on a campaign targeting academics, journalists, human rights advocates, and political advisors. The targets have little in common beyond an interest in Iran and a usually unsympathetic attitude toward the Islamic Republic. Charming Kitten is said to have established a bogus baited news service as Allure, the British news agency. The International Olympic Committee has banned Russia from the next Winter Olympics for systemic abuse of the anti-doping system. Expect Russian security services to engage in some systemic abuse of IOC networks. The Bear siblings, Cozy and Fancy, growled a lot after the last Russian Olympic doping scandal. As we think about threat actors in the news, we can't help but reflect on the naming customs that have emerged for them. If it's a kitten, it's got to be Iranian. If it's a bear, Russian. Panda, China. Dragons, for the most part, East Asian. But our patriotic amour proper is wounded here. Surely there are some good animal names people could come up with that would wink in the direction of the Five Eyes. Some seem obvious. It's hard to imagine Australia and New Zealand without kangaroos and kiwis. But if those are too obvious, how about dingoes and skinks? Like Dutiful Dingo or Smug Skink. It's tougher as you move on to the other Three Eyes. For Canada, loons and beavers? Perhaps. The UK could go with bulldogs, or maybe lions. Unicorns seem out because of their financial connotations. The US is a harder case. The eagle is too obvious. So how about this? Agencies are in all states, and every state has its own patriotic bird, animal, even Maryland at least, where we are, an official dinosaur. Why not associate actors with the state in which the responsible agency has its headquarters? Thus, instead of a boring Fort Meade euphemism like Equation Group, how about something snappy suggested by those Baltimore birds, the official Oriole, or for the poetically minded, Edgar Allan's Raven? And I suppose if you're going to woof in the general direction of Langley, then pick a Virginia theme like the Cardinal, or better yet, the Foxhound. In any case, we're sure the security community would welcome some guidance on the matter, perhaps from the agencies themselves. Let us know what you think. Even generic suggestions like ferrets, foxes, and squirrels are welcome.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
Yeah.
And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Joe Kerrigan. He's from the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute. Joe, certainly with hacks like Equifax.
Yeah, that's great, isn't it?
it's great. And, you know, Yahoo just released recently that it wasn't a billion. It was 3 billion accounts that were released.
That was from, is that from the old breach?
That's from the old breach,
yeah,
right?
So now they're upping that number again.
But I have great. This feeling of fatigue.
Yeah.
And sure. Sort of inevitability. I just don't know what to do with this. If all the information is out there, it seems like surely there must be information about me out there. Must be information about you out there.
Sure.
The odds are, I feel like we've hit this point where the odds are greater that your information is out there than it's not.
Right. No, that's probably 100% correct. When the Equifax breach happened, I was actually at a meeting for a project I work on called Thal, Trustworthy Health and Wellness, with some other institutions. When they heard about this, he said, I'm just going to put my Social Security number on my website. But, you know, it's just out there.
Well, we've talked about this before, I think, offline, that, you know, when I was a student in college, your student ID was your Social Security number.
Right. And I had an ID at the first college I attended that had my Social Security number written on it.
Every test I took in college, I wrote down my student ID number, which was my Social Security number. So how many pieces of paperwork, how many, you know, all of the things that for the university to track, you know, the fact that I went to that school, it's all tied to my Social Security number. So I've heard that there are other nations who have done a better job with this, that they have adopted a digital version of a Social Security number, some sort of secure encrypted kind of thing.
Right.
It seems to me like we have to be heading in that direction, but I've seen little.
We have to move away from Social Security numbers as the primary key on people. We need a data point, a way to identify somebody that can be changed and is revocable. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yes.
Revocable.
Well, I don't know. You recall if you actually have your Social Security card. I do have my Social Security card from, I think I was given to me when I was a child.
Yes. I've lost mine.
Yes. Most people probably have. But on the card, it says this is not to be used as a form of identification.
Correct. Yeah.
Right.
That's right.
And yet here we are.
Trying to do just that.
If only there were a group of smart people who could come up with some sort of way to replace our. But I guess it's momentum. It's
right. Oh yeah, there is a huge momentum problem here. I don't know that anything's going to change until the pain of changing becomes less than the pain of the current state. And for most of us, you know, we're just willing to sit around and wait until something bad happens, like somebody opens an account in our name, and then how bad does that hurt? You know, if someone were to call me tomorrow and say, hey, your mortgage on your property in Florida is overdue. My answer would be, well, go ahead and foreclose. I don't have a property in Florida. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but you know, you could take the credit hit, and I don't know. I mean, perhaps you know that if someone does a targeted attack on every single member of Congress,
right,
and only every single member of Congress, maybe we'll get their attention.
You
right?
mentioned credit hits, right? So if I get enough credit hits,
yeah,
right, and my credit score drops,
right,
then identity theft stops being a problem, right? Because nobody wants to open a credit
card. Well, they won't
card.
Be able to.
Right. They won't be able to open a credit card.
You won't be creditworthy.
my credit score will be like 300 or something.
But
like that.
That's, I think that's part of the point, though, is that if all this information is out there, do all of these services, all the things that rely on this information become sort of meaningless?
Yeah. I mean, how reliable is the information
that's
out there?
Right.
And yeah, I can contest a lot of things on my credit report. So there are anything that's on my credit report, I can put a document in there. There are some laws about that have made it a lot more difficult to open a bank account. I remember the last bank account I've opened, which was actually at a credit union within the past 4 years. I was astounded at how much documentation I had to present just to open a bank account.
Yeah, no, that's true. We opened one for my son recently, and it was a whole, you know, electric bills and, you know, proof of residency and so on and so forth. Yeah. Well, I don't think we've come up with any solutions here, but we've certainly made our complaints known.
All we do is sit here
known.
And complain, right? I like to come up with a solution. That's
Well, you know, as with many things, I think there are some good ideas being tested in other nations.
Yep.
Which seems to be the way that it goes with many of these things.
And we definitely need to start moving in this direction. That is for sure.
It's inevitable. Yep. All right. Well, as always, Joe, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and zero-trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.